Okay, thank you. First of all, I want to say thank you. Thank you, Emily, for this great presentation. Thank you, Heidi, for this introduction. Thank you, Jasmine, that I can be a part of this. Thanks to Johnny Pitt, I'm not sure if he's still listening, for this great way to start a huge discussion, which I hope I can, you know, serve justice to, in kind of like creating an ending or a way out of this deep, dark dungeon that we've just been thrown into. Okay, so that was kind of like the bridge into my topic, because yes, we do deal with racism every day, all day, for the past 500 years in this part of the world, like everywhere else. And one thing is to understand what we're actually dealing with, to see that racism is as structural as the patriarchy, as capitalism. I think the discussions in 2020 have definitely changed the dialogue to a better, but we surely have a long way to go. But where are we actually going? When we say, what are we fighting against, it's always easy to say against racism, against sexism, against capitalism and all the other isms. There are a long line of them. Choose. But what are we actually fighting for? And I think this is a much more difficult question to answer. What does this future beyond racism, sexism, capitalism and all the other isms actually look like? And how do we get there? Yeah. So this is kind of like where I want to take you on in my talk, a journey into the future from an Afro-German or a Black German, or maybe also in a certain way, after that beautiful definition of what Afro-pean actually is, from an Afro-pean perspective. And I would say that it's not looking at through an Afro-futurist lens. I don't think where we're actually going is so utopian after all, but actually something really, really realistic. And what actually comes out of thoughts from Hegel, that's where this Dasein, it actually was non-translatable for me, because existence put it into a total different context. So I left it as a German word, Dasein, meaning actually Hegelian Dasein. And the subject-object dichotomy, whereas we as the Black people have always been the object, which Emily beautifully already, stated. So at the end of Dasein being a reference to the Hegelian philosophy of existence and only being able to be defined on the backdrop of what is not existent. And what is not existent, of course, was blackness, was the Black body, was the Black mind and the Black soul when he was writing his thesis in the 18th century. He defined Black people, especially Africans in this sense, as being without history and therefore being important to civilize us and to, in order to take control of us, because we are very uncultivated beings in this understanding, and that a quote by him in German would be Afrikanerinnen sind nur in der Versklavung frei, meaning Africans can only be free when they are enslaved. And this actually portrayed the thought and philosophy of his time, which justified colonialism, and actually inscribed racism not only into philosophy and science, philosophy, academia, but also into the economic system of colonialism. It took until, I'm going to start 50 years before Fanon, although I think Fanon is also a really, really important reference point that that Johnny mentioned. I'm going to go back to W.E.B. Du Bois, who I think has similar ideas, but just 50 years earlier, when it comes to, he was definitely a Hegelian. He challenged Hegel and actually said, no, Mr. Hegel, we actually do have history as an African people, and our history goes all the way, way further back than European history. Actually, the first universities were on the African continent in Timbuktu. The first calculation systems were African calculation systems. What the computer is built on today, binary calculating systems. We have to, it's actually quite clear why we don't know this, because it was about strengthening European and Eurocentric knowledge, strengthening Europe by cutting everybody else out and making the origin of humanity, the so-called enlightenment, or the enlightenment of white people, you have to say, because black people and African people were definitely not included in that phase. And so Du Bois came along and said, yeah, well, sorry to say, but we actually do have a history, and included African history into the discourse and into academia. And that literally changed the course of time, because it was, it allowed to actually extend an Afrocentric or Afrocentric philosophy, in that sense that Du Bois didn't only deal with the past like Hegel did, but he also included the future into his readings, into his philosophy. And this is something, for example, that German philosophers, white European philosophers, did not do. They were only dealing with the past, in the sense that if you, where you come from is actually what defines you. And I say, yes, that's part of the parcel, but you have, like the Sankofa philosophy, to know where you go and you have to know where you come from. And an Afrofuturistic idea was always part of black liberation, from enslavement to Black Lives Matter, because it is about freedom. Freedom was vision, freedom was the future, and nobody knew what this freedom actually looked like. It was fighting for a utopia, for a vision that we are actually living today. We are living the visions of our ancestors, and we actually owe our ancestors new visions to continue this voyage to get full liberation, full access to human rights, and not limited because of the narrations written onto our bodies today. In a specific German context, because that's my focus of work, what I look at, how does this also translate? Especially coming from Hegelian philosophy, challenging that with W.E.B. Du Bois, who actually was in Germany during German colonialism and studied at the Humboldt University in Berlin. Today's Friedrich Wilhelms University, the Friedrich Wilhelms University, today Humboldt University. Oh my God, no, we don't want to go back in time. We want to go into the future. Humboldt University, during, as a student, and he, it was not a coincidence that he came. I think this is also important to say, that he aimed to come to Germany because he was very influenced by the social sciences that were growing at that time of the turn of the century. So he was here between 1892 and 1894, and from then always continuously came back throughout his life. And whilst he was here, he this is where his ideas from social justice, what later then influenced the movements in the USA, and it really is important to see it that way around, because it was a time where here in Germany, Otto von Bismarck was creating social society, health systems. August Bebel had just founded the SPD, the Social Democratic Party. We have Max Weber, who was actually Du Bois's professor at a university. Not to say that that makes him less anti-Semitic, just a comment at that point, but he actually did push Du Bois's work and wanted to translate his early works. 1903, his most prominent book, The Souls of Black Folk, and so on. So this is this whole social idea, social democratic idea, the social sciences, sociology, which was a new discipline that replaced or kind of like shifted the academic debate away from neurobiological and biological understandings of society, especially of race, especially, is what influenced Du Bois, why he came here and he took all of these thoughts back to the United States, where the civil rights movement was then influenced by thoughts like this and of course of other people. But translating him back, bringing him back, and because we have to ask ourselves, why is this not mentioned in the German context? Why do we never put black knowledge in context? It's due to the power structures. I guess I can answer that question myself. Everybody here knows if you weren't hiding in a cave in 2020 when Black Lives Matter hit, then you know why. So. But what does it actually mean to translate him back, is that some of his concepts, like for example the color line or the veil, actually can be transposed back into a German context. Actually, the color line, meaning the racist structure of society, is one-on-one equal with German borders. If we look into German colonial history, back at a time where the so-called mixed marriage laws were implemented, 1912-1913, and the color line amalgamates with German national borders because race and nation are intersected. And this we experience today when people ask us where we're actually from, although you've been living all your life in Germany, your children are born in Germany, where black as black can be, black is the new black, but and you're still not perceived as being German. Every day I'm asked why I speak German, my German is so good, my German is so fluent. And I'm like, yeah, my German is actually better as some Germans. You know when you reach the point that you actually out-German the Germans with your German, because you're forced to literally be German in that sense? Well, to bring it back to academia, this is what the color line actually says. This is the veil, this is where Fanon and Du Bois actually meet. Fanon uses the metaphor of the mask. Black skin, white mask, that should be known to you. If it's not, then you've still got a lot of reading to do. But the mask is the metaphor that he uses, that is this physical border between black and white people. And Du Bois, 50 years earlier, uses the veil. Yeah? The veil that actually influences the way white people see black people, the way black people see white people, but also the way black people see themselves. And this is also exactly the examples what Emilio was giving, how you're perceived in Germany as a black person, as a black body, that you constantly have Africa written all over your body. We are very much Caribbean, not to say that we're not African in a Pan-African sense, but the understanding and the perception that white people have of Africa is very different than Africans have of Africa herself. So that said, it took until the 80s until these discussions actually reached German academia. And it was through Audre Lorde who came, Audre Lorde, African-American poet, activist, who came to Berlin in the early 80s and as a guest professor. And she was the person who actually ignited the black German community. She was invited by a publishing house to write a book about her experiences in Germany. She said, no, it shouldn't be me writing. It should actually be not from a black US American perspective, but from a black European perspective, which is very two differing perspectives, although they intersect in many ways. But and then the book Farmer Buchanan was published. Oh, I should have been showing you more slides as I went on. This is me actually visiting Du Bois' grave in Ghana, in Accra, there where he's buried. It's actually quite an interesting story because at the end of his life, he said no to capitalism, no to the USA. He gave back his US passport and said, so I'm going home. And because Kwame Nkrumah was one of his best friends and study buddies, as we say, he became Ghanaian. He got Ghanaian honorary citizenship and is buried in Ghana today. But to actually get us into the future, I use one of his stories, one of Du Bois's stories, namely The Comet, which he wrote in 1920. Just a quick rundown of this story. A comet drops on New York. New York is destroyed. There's one survivor, a black man named Jim. And he survived because his boss sends him down into the vault of a bank to get documents that he's been looking for. The door locks behind him. He gets locked in this vault. And when he finally gets out, he realizes that New York is gone. And he's a comet has hit, wiped everything out. The gases that follow the comet have wiped out all life as we know it. He's the last survivor. So he goes through New York and actually starts looking for other survivors and finds Julia, a white woman. Yeah? They are the last survivors and get in this conversation about the structurality of racism and how deep racism is entwined in society. Du Bois actually shows them really in real detail how scared this white woman is of this black man. And although this story was written in 1920, it could have been written today. It literally reminded me of the case of Amy Cooper, who was in New York Central Park, who called the police on Christian Cooper because she didn't have her dog on the leash, and then she performed white supremacy, saying, "Yeah, I'm gonna call the police and tell them that there's a black man molesting me." No? That went viral, and she lost her job and her dog and other consequences, rightfully so. And so this actually shows he was talking about something in the 1920s which is still existing today. That I think is really important to say. So he goes into real detail how she perceives him, how she perceives his black body and his skin and the way she describes him. And then all of a sudden she says, "Oh, he's not as alien as I thought," aka alienation Frantz Fanon, just to drop that there for you. And then they go out together and want to see if there are more survivors, and then they find her father, a white man, and her fiancé, a white man, who were ready to lynch Jim. How could this black man be talking to a white woman? But then Julia jumps in between and saves them and says, "No, he saved me, he saved my life." And then the father says, "Okay," and gives him money, and then says, "You can go, no, but we don't want to see you again," so to say. And you think that's the end of the story, but it's not. The sad part of the story is that behind the crowd comes all of a sudden something we're talking about, a white mob, comes Jim's wife, a black woman, holding a dead black baby. And that's where the story ends. And this is literally one of the first Afrofuturistic stories. Du Bois was a pioneer of Afrofuturism. And with this story, the baby symbolizing the future of blackness, he was actually asking, what is the future of blackness in this country? If a comet comes and destroys the country, but it doesn't destroy racism, how then will we get rid of it? No? Racism is man-made, it's not scientific. Science was used to intensify and to justify and to legitimize racism. But racism is not science, yeah? And I think that is really important to say. Du Bois wrote this story in 1920, shortly after the last pandemic, 100 years ago, known as the Spanish flu. People were forced to wear masks like we were 100 years later. They looked like that, which is quite funny, but it's just, imagining in 100 years from now how people are going to be laughing about our masks, right? So this is literally what happened. The Spanish flu pandemic hit. And this is what influenced him to write the story. So the comet was symbolizing the pandemic, right? The last pandemic, something that will wipe out or could wipe out humanity. But then what follows is what was called the Red Summer of 1919, where white terror racist terror swept the land, and white people were lynching black people. There were mobs on the street. It was called the Red Summer, red symbolizing the amount of blood that shed during this summer. What does that remind us of? Oh, you were in the cave in 2020. Yes, we have a pandemic in 2020 known as Corona, COVID-19, and a year later we have the Black Lives Matter movement. So history is repeating itself. This is actually what led me to use this story to actually show that, to actually show that we're in a form of Sankofaization, as it says, that we're locked in this loop that only we can get out of. There is no science, there is nothing that we can invent that is actually gonna help us out unless we are creative about it and we use the arts and the culture to get out of it. I totally agree with Johnny Pitts. I hope you're listening, I'm not sure right now. When it comes to the part about academia and the role that academia plays in this. Presently, I am a guest professor at the university in Tübingen here in Germany. And I have to tell you this short story how I got there because it's really part of the problem. You know? I did my doctor title because I thought I was going to stay in academia. Creating knowledge, knowledge production, I think, is education. Well, this, as with my Jamaican background, is something we get taught really, really early. That knowledge will save you from the systems, from society, from supremacy of all kinds. So education always played a really important role in my house, although growing up, although I am the only person in my family to actually have visited a university, to have a doctor title, and now presently being a professor. So I thought to myself, doing this doctor title in Germany, growing up in Germany, doing my schooling in Germany, doing my PhD in Germany, that is the route I have to take. So much has to change, and education is power, so that's how you're going to do it. Yeah. Until I actually reached academia and landed in the mind of the beast. Yeah. In the UK, you will say you're in the belly of the beast. I can tell you, Germany is the mind of the beast. That's where all the thoughts happen. No? All this whole racist ideology, that's where it got cooking, I can tell you that much. And comparing to art and the art world, which is constantly moving, which is a more dynamic space in Germany, academia isn't going anywhere for now, I can tell you that much. So I went to the USA, and for the past 3, 4, 5 years, I've been teaching in regularly in the USA, which is hypocritical because I teach about Germany in the German studies departments in the USA because Germany doesn't want me, right? So I'm like, okay, a girl has to survive, right? So go to the USA, where I'm highly respected. My work is highly respected. I have to give them that. And then been invited from one university to the next, from one guest professorship to the next, and then I get invited back as an international scholar, guest professor at the University of Tübingen. Figure that one out. I'll just leave it there for discussion right now. No? Being there, asking myself, what am I doing here? Because I think that actually academia is part of the problem, that it's something that actually upholds the structure. There are two ways about it. You can go inside and like Jonas going into the whale and fighting yourself out, or you can fight from the outside, so to say, and use different weapons maybe, like art. Be creative about it and just move beyond the structures and actually start creating outside of the structure where people, especially young people, younger generations that come after me, don't have to have the same fight, but can actually start at a different point. Not being having to deconstruct everything whilst going in, but can actually start learning in a very creative way what their own history is and where they go. So I joined the Black Speculative Arts Movement, which is an international movement that deals with Afrofuturism, bringing in a Black German perspective into this whole speculative realm. You see the group here, they consist of authors, academics, artists, you name it, that all work in their different fields of make it possible to actually survive and live and strive and come one step closer to our liberation in the future. I then organized, for example, an exhibition under the title of The Comet in 2018 that ran from 2018 to, well, it's still in a way ongoing, like a whole processional thing, starting with the works of Du Bois, who actually also was an artist and a curator. This is also what a lot of people don't know. These are some of the drawings that he did with his students. This is how I opened the exhibition. And then I went to the story of the comet. This is a work by Afro-German Nando Nkrumah, who drew this picture especially for this occasion to Canadian artists. Here you see Quentin Vassetti's version of the Brandenburger Tor in Berlin, which is actually telling German history then from a black perspective. Which is, I'm just going to flip through a few of them so you get an idea of how we literally manifested ourselves, because we've always been a part of this society. Like it's been mentioned this evening already for quite a few times, Europe would not exist without Africa. Europe would not exist without African resources, without African people. And that has always been the case and will always be the case. And this is what Europe very well understands economically as well, especially when it comes to repatriation, when it comes to development aid, etc. pp. Germany is well aware of its power dynamics in that sense. So this book is a result of the symposium. It went on for 3 days. The symposium, what I did, 2020, the publication came. I bought 5 copies for sale, support the artist, you know. And in 2020, we did also an exhibition in the frame of the Black Berlin Biennial. And in 2021, the Bundeszentrale für politische Bildung, that's the federal agency of political education, republished the book, which what for me meant really a lot, because in their library, they have, teachers have access to these books and can, teachers have access to these books and have, and can officially use this material to teach in the classroom. So this was a way of really going all the way around academia and right back into the classroom, because in a sense, my work now can officially be used in a classroom without me being professor. Well, I am now, but we'll see. I was actually finished. One last thing. Here, an image, I couldn't hold back on this one, of all these amazing black people that have done fantastic work in a German context. And without all of these people, I would not be, so kudos to them.